steps from the OR, ER, and research labs of the NYU Langone Medical Center. This is Doctor Radio.
This is pulmonologist Dr. Frank Adams on Doctor Radio, Sirius XM 81.
In our segment now, we're going to focus on tuberculosis. Now, tuberculosis doesn't get much press unless a case pops up. And I know a recent headline was about a person in Atlanta at the Occupy Atlanta demonstrations with tuberculosis. And sometimes someone gets on a plane with TB, and we hear about that. But we don't hear much about it in this country. But TB is a global pandemic. It killed 1.4 million people in 2010 alone. It's estimated that one person dies every 25 seconds from tuberculosis. And to help us know more about TB, I'm happy to have right in the studio Dr. Mel Spiegelman. Good morning, Mel.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here.
Great to have you. And Dr. Spiegelman is an internist, oncologist, a fine physician, but he also took his career in the direction of research and development of new medications. And he spent many years doing that. And currently, he's the president and chief executive officer of the Global Alliance for TB Drug Development, also known as the TB Alliance. He serves on the coordinating board of the World Health Organization's Stop TB Partnership. And Mel, I have to be honest, I didn't know much about the TB Alliance. So perhaps tell us a little bit about that, then we're going to talk about tuberculosis.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks very much for the opportunity. The TB Alliance is an organization, not-for-profit, headquartered here in New York, actually, that was founded in the year 2000, the end of 2000, when there was really the real realization that, in fact, the TB epidemic was truly getting out of control and it was not being handled adequately by the forces that were around at that point. Because clearly, as I think you and most people know, when it comes to new drugs, vaccines, diagnostics, that's been mostly in the purview of the for-profit sector. Mm-hmm. And the diseases that don't have a commercial marketplace really get very short shrift. And it was realized back then that TB was really getting out of control. The one statistic that I think very few people realize is that 2 billion, with a B, people are infected with the organism around the world. It's close to a third of the world's population. And that's really the reservoir of the disease that then crops up when people get sick with TB. And that's been increasing in many ways. So the TB Alliance was formed with a specific mandate to discover, develop, and most importantly, make readily available to those people in need new TB treatments. There has not been a truly new TB treatment in about five decades, which is mind-boggling. That wouldn't be acceptable for any disease that really afflicted those with resources.
Right.
And then we were formed with some seed funding from the Rockefeller Foundation and then from the Gates Foundation as a really totally independent, not-for-profit institution, and have since developed a portfolio of approximately 30 projects that span all the way from early research through what's called phase three, which is the last stages of really clinical development before a drug or a treatment can actually be licensed by the authorities to be used in people. We have partnerships with the major pharmaceutical companies, including Glaxo, AstraZeneca, Bayer, Johnson & Johnson, just to name a few, whom we've been able to get more involved in this area by partnering with them. And what we do is both through our own resources and through really lowering the barrier for others to get involved in this, bring a huge number of partners into play to really participate in the discovery, the development of new drugs for TB. We presently are on the verge of really making just significant progress in terms of tremendous shortening of therapy, more effective therapy, especially for drug-resistant TB, which has especially become a major issue around the world.
Yeah, we're going to talk more about that. Let me tell our listeners, again, we have Dr. Mel Spiegelman right here in the studio. We'd love to get your questions, comments about tuberculosis and new drug development. This is the thing about Dr. Radio. We have an expert, an authority. So this is a great moment for you to call in. Call us at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's also 1-877-698-3627. We had a couple emails in our first hour, so keep the emails going at docs@SiriusXM.com, and we'll get your email on the air. And Mel, some of the things you said just struck home with me, and I was saying in the first hour that my pulmonary training goes back to the early 70s, and I remember as a fellow finding that there were a few drugs for tuberculosis, and here I am 40 years later, and it's the same group of drugs that we're treating. And one statistic you gave, which is astounding, is that 2 billion people worldwide are infected with tuberculosis. Now, our listeners probably don't know much about the TB germ. Again, when a headline comes about the 2 people in Atlanta at a homeless shelter, everyone looks at it and then probably doesn't think much more about it. But what's unique about this TB germ that makes it so hard to kill, and why is it so common in third world populations, other parts of the world, and not so much here in the States?
Well, I have to give the germ credit, not to anthropomorphize it too much,
right,
but it's a brilliant germ.
Okay.
It really is very smart. It knows how to hide out. It knows how to evade the human body's immune system and get itself killed off. It grows very slowly in the body. And it really has evolved in a way that makes it very difficult to eradicate. The really major reservoir for human disease is man, so that if one could, in fact, eradicate the persistence of the organism in people, that would go a long way towards total eradication, although it's unbelievable that, in fact, a TB-like organism exists in an unbelievable amount of species around the world, going from an elephant. Elephants get TB, and you can imagine how much drug it takes to cure an elephant, but down to even very small species. But the human reservoir is really the primary one, and that's what causes the transmission from person to person. What's also interesting about TB is when the human immune system breaks down, then that gives rise to the ability of TB to really crop up and really cause active disease and make people really feel sick. And that's when it got more press, to be honest, was with the outbreak of HIV back in the 80s.
Yes.
Then it was realized that the reason, after not too long a period of time, that patients were dying, the most common reason was actually TB. And it was the activation of TB in the setting of a poor immune system that's caused by HIV that allowed TB to flourish. And as you probably remember, in the 90s in New York City, we had the TB outbreak, the MDR, the drug-resistant TB outbreak.
Yes.
That was in great part fueled by the HIV epidemic.
Right.
So this is a twin epidemic, and especially in the African countries or in other countries where HIV is still so rampant and there is not yet widespread good TB HIV therapy, that TB has gotten an even stronger foothold than ever before.
Okay. We're going to go to a caller with a question about tuberculosis. We have Denise calling us from Rhode Island. Good morning, Denise.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I was recently tested positive for TB and then had a chest x-ray, and that was negative. But I'm wondering if I should... how I should follow up, if it's something I should be concerned about, or what I should do.
That's a great question, Denise. And Mel, maybe using her as an illustration, talk about the latent infection, active infection.
Well, first, Denise, I want to say hello. I grew up in Providence and lived there for many, many years, so I have a very soft spot for all Rhode Islanders, and so thank you for calling. you are one of the 2 billion people that I was talking about, because the fact that you had a skin test that was positive for TB, that shows that you've been exposed somehow to the TB organism, and your body has fought it off successfully enough so that you're not sick from it. But you have what is called latent infection, so that you are infected, but it is what's called latent because you don't have any active disease. You definitely should see a doctor to give you a discrete recommendation for your particular situation. But in general, what is the common practice for most people, but everybody is unique, so you do need to see a doctor about this, is to actually treat it for 6 to 9 months with a medicine that's called isoniazid that would eradicate the organisms that probably do reside in a person's body when they do have latent infection. But like I said, everybody is different, and therefore you do need individualized care from a doctor who really does know your particular situation.
Right. And Denise, are you planning to see someone?
I wasn't, but that's actually good advice, and so I will do that right away.
Okay, that's great, and we so appreciate it's a great question, a great call. We thank you for listening to Dr. Radio as well. I want to tell all the listeners, this is Dr. Frank Adams with Dr. Mel Spiegelman. We're talking about tuberculosis. We're talking about research, development of new drugs, the work of the TB Alliance that Dr. Spiegelman heads, and we're taking all your questions about TB at 1-877-NYU-DOCS. That's also 1-877-698-3627. Email us at docs@SiriusXM.com. We'll get your email on the air. And one thing you just mentioned, Mel, that I know gets everyone's attention and always, still after so many years, impresses me, was that 6 to 9 month period of taking medication. And again, as someone who goes back many, many years, I know it was 18 months when I started out as a pulmonary fellow. Yeah. Why so long to be treated for TB?
Well, that's an excellent question. And in fact, it goes back to the fact that we have not had much research until very recently on finding new and better therapies. So as I alluded to earlier, the TB organism is a really smart one. It goes sort of into hiding. And most of the antibiotics that we have, and especially those that were discovered early, tend to attack bugs that are dividing pretty rapidly. TB grows really slowly, so these drugs are not super effective unless you give them for unbelievably long times. So the treatment for latent infection is 6 to 9 months. The treatment for the easiest to treat active infection is also 6 to 9 months. Mm-hmm. The more difficult cases take years. And the standard treatment for a patient with a multi-drug resistant TB, which is resistance by definition to only two drugs, can be in the order of 2 to 3 years. It can include daily injections for months, and with drugs that are fairly toxic and difficult to take. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at really archaic treatments that take months to years, and with MDR-TB, even in the best of hands, probably still only cure perhaps 60% of those patients in spite of that treatment.
Okay, and I want to get into talking about drug resistance, why it develops, but I see we have a couple of calls. Let's go quickly to Liz from Birmingham, Alabama. Good morning, Liz.
Hi, good morning. I just had a quick question about that isoniazid, if I'm pronouncing it right.
Yes.
I know quite a few people who have tested positive with a TB skin test with negative chest x-rays who were never treated with anything. We always thought the isoniazid was for active TB, but I guess that's incorrect.
Good question.
Yes, in fact, that's exactly what you don't want to do, is treat active TB with either isoniazid alone or any one single drug. So the treatment for latent infection when you're not sick and you have a negative chest x-ray, that can be isoniazid alone. But if a patient person has active infection, then what you have to do is treat them with multiple drugs. The least is usually 4 drugs, and oftentimes isoniazid is one of those 4. But what we know from harsh lessons in history is that when you treat with one drug for active TB, what almost invariably happens is the organism gets resistant to that antibiotic. Mm. And that's exactly how antibiotic resistance develops in TB patients, is because the disease is not treated adequately, because it can be very difficult for patients to stay on a very complex regimen of 4 to even 7 or 8 drugs for months, if not years, and do that pretty religiously. So, yes, never take isoniazid alone for active infection. Yeah. It's only for what's called latent infection.
Okay. Liz, thank you. That's a great question.
Can I ask him one more quick question?
Quickly, yes.
Okay, if you give isoniazid to someone with the latent TB, does that severely reduce their chances in the future if their immune system comes weak of developing active? Is that why you do it?
No, you do it really to cure the existing latent infection, but it does not give you what's called immunity after that. So once you stop taking the drug, if you get exposed again to TB, you can again get infected.
Okay. Liz, great questions, and thanks for calling, listening. I want to go to Ann, who has a question about from Texas, TB and the pancreas. Good morning, Ann.
Good morning. I have a good friend that had TB, and he said that if he ever got TB again, that it could go into another organ. I think he said his pancreas, that could be deadly, and I was just curious about that fact.
Okay, so TB outside the lungs.
Yeah, well, TB really is a systemic disease. And by systemic, it means it has the, quote, propensity or ability to affect and infect really any organ in the body. If you really look, if you could look really closely, even though probably 50% or so of the cases in the world are called pulmonary TB, but those patients almost invariably do have some organisms in other parts of the body. This has been given all sorts of names that you may even hear of. Pott's disease is really tuberculosis of the bone. There's a disease that we call scrofula. That's a disease that really is TB in the lymph nodes. Children, unfortunately, are predisposed to getting TB that affects their brain and actually cause meningitis. So TB is a potentially, well, it's obviously a deadly disease, but also has a propensity to affect every organ in the body if not treated.
Okay.
And, wow, how interesting.
And we really appreciate your calling in and listening. I want to tell all our callers again, we're fortunate to have Dr. Mel Spiegelman with us talking about tuberculosis, talking about the TB Alliance. We love your calls. We love your emails. And the call number is 1-877. These are toll-free, by the way. NYU Docs, 1-877-698-3627. Email us, docs@SiriusXM.com. I always say your questions are better than anything I can come up with, so keep them coming. And Mel, looking around the world, the problem of drug resistance that you've touched on already, is it increasing? Is it decreasing? Where are the worst parts of the world for this?
Yeah, it's definitely increasing. No question about that. Mm. Resistant TB is getting worse, and it's getting to be a bigger and bigger problem around the world.
Mm.
It really affects every country in the world. If you look at the absolute numbers, then China and India are the worst countries in terms of absolute numbers, but that's a reflection to a certain extent of the large population in those countries. If you look at it on a so-called incidence basis or per capita basis, then the African countries are also bad. But, in fact, the worst countries on a per capita basis are in the former Soviet Union in Eastern Europe. Mm. So, as you can tell just by the countries that I've mentioned so far, this is a worldwide epidemic, and it is caused by the fact that the treatment for TB is so difficult.
Yeah.
And what invariably happens is that when patients do get treated, they wind up selectively taking some medications, not the others, and that selects for more and more resistance.
Mm.
And now we definitely have cases around the world that are not sensitive to any known antibiotic, which is really scary.
Yeah, and this makes the work of the TB Alliance even more important and critical to develop new drugs. And we've got a bunch of callers, so let's go to Donna from New Jersey about TB. Good morning, Donna.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
General question for you. I was at one point tested for tuberculosis via a blood test because I thought maybe I had spinal TB because I had a MRI that was showing perhaps like an indolent infection. And the blood test came back negative, but then I heard you talking about a skin test before. Is one test more accurate than the other?
Okay, that's great. Blood test relatively new.
That's a great question. Yeah. I wish I had a definite answer for you.
Right. Great question, though.
The tests are testing a little bit different things, and usually the blood test is very accurate also. So the blood tests that are available today, and there are three of them primarily used differentially in different parts of the country, are ones that are very reliable. There's nothing that's ever 100%, and therefore there always is clinical judgment that has to be involved with the interpretation of any test, especially when you're dealing with areas like the spinal column or the central nervous system, which is a so-called sanctuary area that sometimes doesn't communicate that well with the rest of the body. So, I think, again, you should obviously be seen by a physician who can advise you for your particular situation, but having a negative either blood test or a skin test is usually fairly reliable.
Okay. Donna, I hate to be a little abrupt, but we got a bunch of callers. I don't want to run out
of
time. Thanks so much for listening and calling. We have Teresa on the line from Georgia. Good morning, Teresa.
Good morning. I hope you can hear me.
We can.
Okay, great. I have a three-part question. One, is TB a bacteria or a virus? I tuned in late. You may have answered that.
Okay.
If it's a virus and you say you can catch it again after you've been cured, would that be a different strain of TB virus or would it be the same virus?
Uh-huh.
And can you carry TB on the skin such that you test positive but you don't really have TB?
Okay, so the nature of the organism, Mel, is...
It is really in the bacterial family. It's called a mycobacteria, but it's a much bigger organism than a virus. And the problem with TB is that you do not develop immunity once you catch it. There are some diseases, infectious diseases, which, as you know, if you get them once in your life, you're not going to get them again because they evoke a certain amount of what's called immunity, and that protects you for the rest of your life. And unfortunately, that's not at all the case in TB. You can get TB, unfortunately, time and time again, and that's also what makes the development of a vaccine more difficult because there is not the natural tendency to develop immunity. I'm not sure I caught the third question.
Yeah, she wondered if there could be a false positive skin test, but in fact, it's more the false negative. But if somebody has a positive skin test, could it be wrong?
Yeah. The chances of that are relatively small. The, quote, antigens that are used are pretty specific, but nothing is ever 100%. But the tests for diagnosis are pretty good.
Okay. We're going to go to Karen. Karen's calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Good morning, Karen.
Good morning. I used to work in Boston City Hospital way back in the 80s, and I tested positive at that time. And I only took the treatment for 3 months and then kind of just let it fall off. And I have had one chest x-ray since then, and it was negative, and I'm not symptomatic. But I'm wondering if, you know, I don't even really remember that positive test. Is it bad to have a second skin test, or how can I follow up to make sure there's, you know, nothing latent in my system?
Yeah, great question. I guess a couple of things there, and this is so common, I guess, Mel, people don't finish the full course of therapy. It's a long treatment. And also, if someone's been positive, and a lot of people working in hospitals get tested every year, should they get tested again after being positive?
Yeah, usually there's not a huge amount of benefit in being tested again, because once you're positive, you'll tend to stay positive, and the significance of that is difficult to interpret, because even with successful treatment, the skin test may not turn negative. I can tell you on a very personal level, I actually converted when I was a youngster living in Rhode Island. I don't know from where. And then somebody tested me a second time because they didn't believe that. This is going back quite a bit of time. And it caused a rip-roaring reaction in the skin. So again, you really should just see your physician to really discuss your individual case, because this is one of the typical difficult situations when somebody has been so-called half-treated. And unfortunately, this is not at all uncommon, and this is part of the reason that we need much better drugs. And in fact, we're shooting ultimately to have drugs that will cure in the order of 1 to 2 weeks, not months and years.
Okay. So, Karen, great question. We love the fact you're listening. I want to thank all. We had some great calls in our segment. I want to thank all our listeners. We just have about 2-3 minutes left with Dr. Mel Spiegelman. I have to tell him also, I had childhood TB myself, active disease. Actually, that got me interested in the lungs. And here I am, a pulmonologist. So, so benefits can come from being sick early in life. But how close? I know you're working, again, the mission of the TB Alliance is new medications that can be more effective and shorten the duration. How close are we to some of these drugs?
Oh, we're getting really close. Like I said, we have one product that's already in what's called phase three, and we're going to finish that clinical trial, hopefully, in terms of getting patients on it by the end of this year or early next year. And that obviously will take a little bit more time to get the final data. And then we have a really unbelievable regimen, drug combination, that's now in the middle, later middle stages of drug development that could be ready if we get the right resources, which is a major issue in TB, is that getting the resources to do the sort of work that we do is extremely difficult, and it is somewhat expensive to develop new products. But we're looking at the order of a few years if we can get the resources. We're no longer looking at decades or impossible advances. This is all within striking distance.
And Mel, what would you like the public to do? We want everyone to know more about tuberculosis. Any activism you want them to participate in?
Oh, yeah. This is something for everybody to get involved. I would refer you to our website, which I think is a pretty good website. www.tballiance.org. And you can read up on all of this information, but also see ways to get involved. We need to get more advocacy, and especially here in the U.S., where people forget about TB because it's not something that knocks on everybody's doorstep, but it is on your doorstep considering how close we are to other people around the world and the immigration that goes on now and all of that. So I would recommend visit our website, get involved, give us a call anytime, and we're happy to really get involved on a personal level with anybody who wants to help and be more involved.
All right. Fantastic. Dr. Mel Spiegelman, wonderful meeting you and having you on the show. Mel, I hope you'll come back, talk more about it.